Pan African Connect on CliffCentral.com.
It is Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. My name is Rosie Motena, a.k.a. the Afro-Yiddish Princess. Welcome to another show titled Pan-African Connect, where I look to the four corners of our beautiful continent, talk to amazing people about love, career, tradition, culture, weather, politics, anything you name it, but it has to be pertinent to our African continent. If you want to call in, the number is 0861 555 189. On Twitter, we're CliffCentral.com. My personal Twitter handle is PrincessRTM. And of course, we're on Facebook, WeChat, and Instagram under the specific names Cliff Central and of course Rosie Motene. Today, we are looking to Botswana. But before we even get into who we're going to be talking about and what's happening in Botswana, as always, we start the show with this.
Yeah, uh-huh, you know what it is.
Black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish, black and Jewish.
Yeah.
Back to the show. My name is Rosie Motena, a.k.a. the Afro-Yiddish Princess. Welcome to my show titled Pan-African Connect. Every week I connect to a different country on our continent, speak to amazing people. We talk about love. We talk about tradition. We talk about culture. We talk about activism. Anything that's interesting, that's pertinent to our continent, we are going to discuss it on the show. And today we are heading to Botswana, one of my most favorite countries in Africa. In fact, you know, I think I start every show that country is one of my most favorite because there isn't a country that I haven't visited in Africa that I haven't had some form of connection to. But before I introduce my next guest, I just want to read you this powerful piece of writing. A sandy stream where wild creatures dream. Mirage music in silence with thirst lips. A bed of diamonds. Feeble breezes kiss the dazzling sand, dancing melodically, with every twirl giving birth to prodigious mounts, a brown desert crown. The slown sun scotches the sand, the warm wind whisks the whiff of baked sand, an aroma of how the sun loved the earth. A blanket of stars, ride of horizon of dunes, surround a crystal moon like a bride. Desert stars love and care as a teeming thoroughfare colors of your mind on desert summer night. Cactus and animal thorns in revere of torrent gutters. The sand gathers berries. Hunt springboks. Dinner under the sun. I have on the line recording poet, singer, dancer, image model, activist. She hails from Gaborone, Botswana. She has a bachelor degree in arts, specializing in English poetry. She also has a certificate in German. Ladies and gentlemen, introducing Miss Berry Hart. How are you, darling?
Good afternoon, Rosie, and thank you for inviting me this afternoon.
It's only a pleasure. How is Gaborone doing today? Is it as hot as Johannesburg?
It's blazing hot. I think you guys are slightly 5 or 2 degrees cooler than Botswana.
Yeah. So, Berry, before we get into all of the work that you've done and the most amazing work and how your brand has become global, where did it all begin? Where in Botswana were you actually born?
I was born in a settlement called Magarat, which is actually in the Kalahari.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very, very small settlement, which is not even recognized as a village. So there is no water, there is no electricity, no schools, no cable. So it's actually a settlement in the desert and, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And what languages did you grow up speaking?
I speak Cree languages, which are actually one of Southern Africa's first languages, which is the Kalahari.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was English. Kalahari is my mother tongue. That is English because Kalahari, my mother tongue, is not part of the school. So I was supposed to speak English at a very young age, then Setswana as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to learn both Setswana and English when I went to school because my mother tongue was not taught in school, even now. And then that is when I got into international languages like French and German at a later stage in life.
Mm. And now you say that even up until now, the mother tongue isn't on the curriculum. Is it something that the Botswana government are looking at incorporating? Because, I mean, although your village was small, but you are still part of the bigger picture in terms of Botswana.
Oh, yes. My language has not even put in the curriculum right now. And generally, that is why where I'm from, actually in the last settlement, I'm the only one who's been to tertiary school.
Mm-hmm.
But the situation is that we're far from school, far from any type of development. And also that the language is not used. So a lot of girls, boys and girls, get intimidated when they go to school and they see that a total different language is being used to education.
Mm. And let's start with your poetry. And I remember you telling a story, and in fact it was even on the CNN interview, but telling a beautiful story about your grandmother relaying old Botswana folktale. Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yes, that is very important because it shaped my poetry to a greater extent. Because in my culture, in the evenings, we don't go to discos and parties. What we do is my grandmother will gather us around fire and then she will tell us stories. And these are stories that guided me today because of the messages that it incorporated or the themes of those stories. She used to tell us those stories that it's actually stories, it's just poetry, you know, in my mother tongue. It is just so beautiful because it has songs, it has messages.
Mm.
That is where my poetry really started, because that is why I said, but I can't do storytelling, I can do poetry. Although there is a thin line between poetry and storytelling, but I must say that my grandmother's storytelling played a very, very critical role in the poet that I am today, or the woman that I am today.
Yeah. What type of messages did she put through her storytelling?
What type of lessons?
What type of messages?
Oh, messages were usually about young girls, the beauty of a young girl. They were about taking care of the less privileged or people born with disability, or respecting the elders, you know, and also that how I mean, some of them just in greater extent got something like gender-based violence, how girls are supposed to be safe, you know, different things, yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. And do you remember one of the first poems that you ever wrote? You don't have to recite the whole poem, but do you remember the context of what it was about?
Yes, it was about June 16th, really. Because as you know, that whatever that happened back in the days in South Africa, South Africa has always been a sister to Botswana. You know, everything that happened somehow, Botswana knew about it, even to a great extent. So what happened in June 16 in South Africa back in the days, we used to, even now, we still celebrate June 16 as the Day of the African Child. So that poem was about the Day of the African Child, of how we are supposed to, the whole idea around the June 16. I'll look for it one day, because this is the second time I'm being asked about that poem. Yeah. I have to look for it.
Because there's obviously a reason it's going to be coming up again at some point. And when you were at university, one of the things that you did delve into was gender studies. Now, looking back to when you were studying, what were the issues revolving around gender issues and women's issues in Botswana?
My country has been really backward in terms of women issues. Mm. I'll just give you examples that only recent years, women are allowed to go to school, women are allowed to inherit the estate of the family. Women are only allowed to be chiefs at this moment in time, but something that was very different, or even inherit, or even make any decisions, you know. As you know, that at the moment, Botswana is one of those countries in Africa with very little women in high positions. Yeah. In parliament, I think we have only two or three women in Botswana. And it has been like that as long as I've lived. We haven't had women in parliament, more than five women in parliament at the same time. And that is the culture that was there. Women were only seen as household people. They were supposed to take care of the household, and that was it. And it limited a lot of women. And only a movement of women like Emam Basaji, Mohalis Mohoi, and Masitshayelo, these are the women who came with ideas. They came with women empowerment. They came with gender equality. That is when everything changed. They really fought, because I remember that a lawyer, a female lawyer and a male lawyer would do the same job, but not and the same. A female lawyer will earn less than the male lawyer or a male doctor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, although that's happening in Botswana, those parameters and those things are actually happening worldwide. And I know for a fact, and I'm not saying every law firm is like that, but there are such scenarios where male counterparts are earning a substantial amount, much much higher than what their female are, you know. And I think those are some of the other barriers that we still need to break through. But going back to the women of Botswana, because if you look at your education system, and if you look at the education system for a lot of the SADC countries, Zimbabwe also, the level of education is incredibly, incredibly high. So if women are going to universities and they're getting their degrees, are they not utilizing that, or they're just going back to like their traditional cultural way?
We are utilizing it. Like I tell you now, the situation, we used not to have a woman as a CEO and stuff like that, but right now most of the CEOs are females, ministers are females. We just had for the first time Margaret Nasha as the Madam Speaker of the Parliament. You know what I mean? We're having female lawyers. And you're having people like Derry Hart who are actually doing it in the arts industry, because in the arts industry, even at this moment in time, it's very difficult for a woman. But now you have women like Derry Hart who are actually saying a woman can do everything, a woman can be a leader.
Yeah. And what I found really, really admirable, and it's, I'm sure it's also a great honor for you, is that one of your poems, or at least a couple of your poems, are used in the curriculum at the University of Botswana. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes, Child of My Mother. This is one of the poems that I think you really enjoyed last time when we were here in Botswana in my album launch.
Yes.
Child of My Mother. And this poem, I wrote it for, usually when we go for elections, we have girls being murdered and raped, and we have girls. A month of November for a girl's house in Botswana. I'll talk about Botswana this particular time because I know and I have newspapers and I've done research on that. The month where women are raped and murdered is November month, and that is very painful because of the 16 days of activism against violence in women and children. And then I wrote a poem entitled "The Child of My Mother," where I'm actually speaking to the souls of these murdered girls. I'm talking to, telling them that it will be okay, and how, when they will own their bodies and stuff like that, trying to sensitize gender-based violence of that sort.
Yeah. And what if, I mean, we know that you know, and I mean, I've bear testament to it of being there and having to deal with police not taking heed when it comes to reporting on violent issues, especially when it comes to women. I know you're breaking through a lot of barriers, but what are the changes that have happened over the last 10 to 15 years of people actually acknowledging that it is a problem?
Oh, yes. Right now, I can just say, although it's not satisfactory, I think now it's very... my country is really trying. It's moving towards gender equality. Now it's recognizing women, and now it can hear women. Mm. Although it's still at the infant stage. I'll give you an example. When you report as a woman, if the police intimidate you, because sometimes they'll try to intimidate you. They try to intimidate me. Yeah. Early this year when I was reporting about a violence and racism issue.
Yeah.
But then after they realized that I cannot drop my case and that I was not like any other woman, but very happy when they started helping. And I was like, oh my God, how many women have been so intimidated and they went home without registering their cases?
Mm. Well, I mean, we witnessed that like 2 years ago when that incident happened with me and Basal, and on Twitter feed, people were saying, well, you know, why is it, if women are being beaten up every single day, why is it a big thing because it's happened to Rosie Mudene, you know, and why does Barry Hart have to bring Botswana into this? And, you know, and trying to have dialogue with people about that, about the issues that, yes, it's happening, but if it's happened to one person, we should all be screaming. You know, and that's what made me realize that a lot of people, especially from Botswana, young women, are not talking about it because they feel that they don't have a voice.
Yes, it's because they have been silenced and they have thought that they have been brainwashed and taught that it's okay to be battered, it's okay to be degraded with insults and all sorts of things. But the reason why I could not at any given point care, even I'm proud of it, that this happened to my sister and I do not want my country to be, you know what I mean? It's because I am first a woman before I am a Motswana.
Yeah.
I am a human being and I'm a woman, and sadly that is when I am a Motswana, among other things.
Yeah.
And whatever happens to a woman can happen to me.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Because you remember that even after 2 years, the very same thing happened to me.
Mm.
Not because I am a Motswana or South African, or just because I'm a woman.
Yeah.
And whatever that happens to a woman, I shouldn't look at it with a blind eye. It should really concern me.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter. I can't protect the country more than I can protect women.
Yeah.
Women are supposed to be protected first before you can protect the country. We have those issues that are not reported in the Botswana, unfortunately.
Mm.
Somehow, we do not report such issues because we want the world out there to see us as a very perfect country, but what is happening behind closed doors of a reality?
Mm. Yeah, and it goes back to that old adage of people saying, okay, well, don't hang your dirty laundry out, and you know, and it, for me, it's not my dirty laundry because I didn't dirty it. So if something's happening within my home that is negative or wrong, I've every right to talk about it. You know, and somebody else said to me, well, you know, the old African way is that it takes a village to raise our children, and we will protect our children. But that's changed because we've got uncles and brothers and fathers who are raping our children in that village. So, you know what I mean? In terms of the tradition and culture, we need to relook at that in a sensitive and respectful manner, but relook at those as those type of issues. But going back, where did your activism actually stem from?
You know, it's very, very difficult to say this is where my activism started, because I grew up around women being battered. Remember, when you're from a settlement, you're talking about where, you know, after drinking, women will be battered. I saw that from a very young age. And even at school, when boys tried to bully me, I used to beat them so hard. I used to protect girls in my class. I remember one good day, this guy used to beat guys and everything. And then I told those girls, why can't we just beat this guy, all of us? And they were scared. I remember one day this boy tried to mess with me. I beat him up. I locked up the classroom with full of 30 students, and I walloped him. I took the broomstick. I beat him to the pulp up until he escaped through the window. And since then, he stopped bullying girls.
Yeah.
I have always been an activist. But, of course, as you grow and as you become a public figure, then people will think that you started that, or maybe when you started working with the United Nations or Gender Affairs or Ministry of Labor and Home Affairs. But I've always been an activist.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely something that's in your blood, and you've got to be passionate about it. Otherwise, it wouldn't be carried out through every part of your life. And I mean, the beauty about your brand is that you've combined your activism with a lot of your art form. And I remember you, a couple of years ago, you were given a contract from the European Human Rights Commission. What was that contract about, and what was your mandate?
I did not get that one properly.
The European Union Human Rights Contract that you
had. Yes. There's a certain gentleman called Mugabe, who is actually the predecessor of the current ambassador for European Union Botswana. And he had seen me do a lot of events with the Gender Affairs Department and the Ministry of Labour and Home Affairs. And he could see that most of my poems were for women empowerment, they were talking about women rights, you know, stuff like that. So he thought that there is a project coming in the next month. So he thought, you know, I'm supposed to advertise this, but why should I advertise it when I know that the right person that I've been seeing several times in events doing, I've never seen an artist in Botswana getting worried about gender-based violence, but there's a lot of it behind closed doors and we know about it. So we are going to be our spokesperson in the European Union Human Rights Policy. So basically, I was just having events, and they gave some sponsorship to three organizations. Like the other one was our beautiful women's shelter that does amazing stuff to women who are homeless or those that are abused. And usually when we had events, I was doing shows for them and speaking on their behalf as a poet, as a public figure about gender-based violence. It was basically that.
And with, I mean, one of the shelters which I always support when I'm there is the Kahisano Women's Shelter. And I mean, it's amazing work that what they're doing for these women and getting out of the environments. But do they have a longevity plan? Because, I mean, although the woman is taken out of the abusive environment and then she's taken to a place of safety, and of course there's a whole upliftment program and so forth, but is there a longevity plan of getting the woman into the workplace, getting her a place of her own, that type of thing? Or is that still something that we need to work on?
Yes, women's shelter really needs a lot. If I got the question right, I don't know what is happening to the network. But women's shelter and other organizations do need a lot of sponsorship. I don't think what they're getting is enough.
Yeah.
What we should be doing now, we should just start with education for the girl child at a very young age, teaching the girl child how to be independent.
Yeah.
That is very important. And then at a later stage when that happens, I mean, you giving me accommodation, Rosie, when I'm in a situation, you are not helping me in the long term. That's a short-term help, you know. But when I do things that are going to make you have your own accommodation, your own job, be independent, then I'm changing the world. They say, teach a woman, then you have really taught the whole generation. But I think it really should start at a very young age. We should teach the girl child to go to school, to be independent, to be involved in business and for good jobs, you know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, in front of the entrepreneurs.
Yeah, and also just by also educating young girls from a young age that it's okay to be educated. It's okay to have an opinion. In fact, it's a lot sexier than showing off your cleavage or showing off your thighs, you know, because, I mean, if you look at the mainstream media, that is what's been pushed out. And I suppose, you know, and also another thing which is very, very important, and people always say, well, why didn't she leave? If you've been broken down on an emotional and psychological level to such an extent that you've been told that you're an idiot or you're fat or you're stupid and so forth, how are you going to get up and go because you don't think that you have the courage? You don't believe in that. You think you don't have a voice.
You know, that is a very important point, Rosie.
Yes.
That's a very important point that you have raised. You know what I mean? And it nearly brings tears to my eyes because that is why I said we have to start it at a very young age. We should tell our little girls, because our society teaches girls to be educated, but not too educated.
Yeah.
It teaches our girls to be successful, but not too successful because we can intimidate men and we can't get married. Mm. That's the whole idea. They want you to be average.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they will tell you that you are not so beautiful. You know, even, I remember very well that my aunt used to think that she's playing with me because my mom's side is more like the Khoisan and the Kalahari. So they are light skinned. I don't know if you know the history of Bakalakadi Basara. That's the reason why they're light skinned.
Right.
It's the history is more that they used to be raped by the white South Africans that invaded the land.
Okay.
That's the whole idea behind it. And they are products of race. So that they are more of light skinned. But my father is from the northern side of Botswana, so he's darker. And I came out a little darker than anybody else in the family. I remember that up until I told my father and he told my aunt not to call me that. They used to call me different, like Mutebele, you know.
Mm.
In my culture, when somebody say Mutebele, it's more of an insult because they're not saying you're Mutebele, but they're saying Mutebele because you are darker or you charcoal. They used to call me charcoal or something like that. But then, or the black one.
Mm.
So then I told my father about it and he stopped it. And I remember that was the last time I heard anybody calling me that name. And I am telling you that if that would have gone to an certain extent, I was going to believe that because I'm darker, I'm not the most beautiful one. You know what I mean?
Or you're not that worthy, yeah.
Yes, exactly. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So that's it. It all starts from a young age.
Yeah, and it's just like planted that seed of what you're going to put into a child's head. But we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to listen to Taste of Love by Barry Hart. If you want to call in, the number is 0861-555-189. And, of course, we're on Twitter at cliffcentral.com or PrincessRTM or Barry Hart Poet on Twitter if you want to ask any questions or if I'm leaving anything out. We'll take a quick break, listen to a song, and then get back into Barry Hart's brand and how her brand's gone international. But after this.
Good morning, gold MacBook, and you, silver MacBook, and you, space gray MacBook.
Let me finish.
You're all just so beautiful. Just look at your 12-inch retina display and force touch trackpad. Sleep now, my lovelies. I need to tell South Africa where to buy you.
Introducing the all-new 12-inch MacBook, now thinner and lighter than ever, and available at iStore. Why would you go anywhere else? Visit myistore.co.za for more info. T's and C's apply.
Pan-African Connect on cliffcentral.com.
That was the beautiful sounds of Barry Hart, Taste of Love, all the way from Botswana. Welcome back to the show. My name is Rosie Motena, a.k.a. the Afro-Yiddish Princess. Welcome to my show called Pan-African Connect, where we connect with people all around our beautiful continent, talking about love, tradition, culture, career, traditions, as I said. And today we're focusing on Botswana, and she's definitely the pearl of Botswana, and it's Barry Hart. Barry, the song that we just played now, Taste of Love, when did you record that?
Say that again, Rosie.
The song we just played now, Taste of Love, when did you record that?
I recorded that both in Botswana and Germany.
Mm-hmm. And who did you collaborate with?
In the very same song.
Yes.
Oh, you mean in the album? The song is just very hard. I'm not featuring any artists.
Yeah, but the whole album, you've got a couple of other collaborations.
Yes, I have lots of collaborations because I've realized that when you work with different artists, they take the best out of you and they take you out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, absolutely. But going back to some of your other work, one of my favorite is Children of Mawe, which you launched in 2012. Yes. What was the idea and inspiration behind that?
Children of Mawe means really is a Chichewa word meaning tomorrow. But when you say children of tomorrow, it's because children of the moment are supposed to be like children of tomorrow. Like in my dreams, I dream of children who grow from an abuse, zero abuse environment. I want children that grow around environments where there's equal opportunities for the boy and the girl child.
Mm-hmm.
That is what I call the whole album Children of Mawe. It talks about women empowerment and against gender violence, from the first track to the last track in different ways.
Mm. And you have, I mean, you get invited to festivals all around the world. Last year, I mean, you were in Kenya. You've come to South Africa many a times. Let's talk about the Kritia Poetry Festival, which happened in India. You were selected out of a lot of people to represent your country. Tell us more about that.
You're talking about, did you ask that I've been traveling around the world, including South Africa?
Yeah, but we're going to focus more on your India trip.
Okay, India. That was the 9th edition of the Kritia International Poetry Festival.
Yeah.
Which is actually one of my best voyages so far.
Wow. Why is that?
Because, you know, I went to an Indian school at a certain point, and I've always been around Indians because where I grew up, there was Indians around.
Mm-hmm.
That's when Indians really came to Botswana and really conquered the business industry, because right now they're the most successful business people in Botswana.
Okay.
And I've always had something about India, but when I wrote, January last year, we launched an anthology where I was writing with Indian poets in the world, the movement for poets around the world who speak against abuse, against disrespect of humanity, against killings of humanity. You know, just we speak peace in our poetry. So what was happening in Afghanistan with the Zahara people, I know that you know about that.
Mm.
So we wrote an anthology that was raising funds for the Zahara community.
Wow.
Then we launched it. They launched it there in Afghanistan in January 2014. So then later on, when they started getting copies for themselves around the world, the organizer of the International Poetry Festival, Reti Sakrina, they say.
Mm.
She's the one who invited me because she read my works and she said, you know, when you come across Rosie Modini, the best way to do is just to Google, to read, to listen to my music, because my music is there, especially Children of Mawe, which is one of my best productions that I started putting on iTunes and Amazon and other 250 websites. So she was really impressed about how I make my poetry with sort of stage drama, dance, and music, and she thought, we are doing poetry differently. What we want you to do is we're inviting you to Kritia Poetry Festival, and also we want a younger person, because the reason why most of the time the university students don't like it is because old people or professors are reading them poetry. So with you, you are going to bring the energy and the difference, and that's exactly what I did. And India is so amazing, you know, so totally different from Botswana. It's so congested, and these small cars—I forgot what they are called—so just totally different and amazing. And I like the way they dress. You know, the men, the gentlemen, just take the cloth around and they move bare-breasted, or should I say, topless? You know,
there's a different level of freedom.
because I was like, you can't walk around town as a Motswana man with topless. You know what I mean? But these guys are just so just really, really, really different and interesting. Oh my God, I love India.
It's just that freedom of expression. But that's so beautiful about actually just traveling to different cultures or different traditions, is that you realize how we are so alike, but at the same time, there are just certain things that what happened in one country can never happen in your own home.
Exactly. You know, traveling around, most importantly, because I'm a linguist and I'm a multilingual poet, is because it teaches you tolerance.
Yeah.
Learning and tolerating other people's culture is very important as a citizen of the world.
Yeah.
Because then you will know that in India, I have to dress in this way.
Yeah.
In South Africa, I have to dress this way, and I shouldn't say this. In Kenya, this is what I do. And I want to tell you something. Zimbabwe is my name, but when Albert Nyati invited me to Zimbabwe, I was really shocked to get the opposite of what I get from the international media about Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe is such a beautiful country.
Yeah, it is. It's incredibly powerful.
Kenya was so safe for me when I went there, but I went there, you remember, during Ebola times, and I went there last year during, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's so amazing how we hear different things from international media, while we miss the small positive things about a certain country.
And that's sad. I mean, the media have such a powerful position, and we need them. Okay. But it's also that they could change your mind or perception of a nation without even realizing it.
Exactly.
But now you've also been, you've been at the tack of media on different occasions because of your controversy. And one of the things, that's one of the things that when we first met and what resonated with me about you is that you just stand your ground when it comes to representing who you are. This is my body and so forth. But one of the most pertinent articles that came out and it even got across the store across to South Africa was the letter that you had written to your president. Let's talk about that.
You know, there's something that my president said years ago, and I wrote immediately about it because I've always liked him as a person before he became the president. But, you know, we could all predict that he's the son of the best president, so at one point he's going to be a president. Always predicted that. So I wrote a poem about him years ago and changed it and kept on developing it over the years. And for the last years, he was addressing a conference, or should I say a political rally somewhere, and he said he was saying he wants women that are skinny, light-skinned, and tall. And I was like, I really have to respond to this, because in Botswana generally, women are darker and shorter.
That's why I was giggling. Because I've seen very, very few thin and light skin. It's all these gorgeous, voluptuous bodies and chocolate skin and so forth. So what is your response to that?
That is why when people come to Botswana, they say, what have you realized about Botswana? They say, Botswana got beautiful women. Because we are very different from anywhere else in the world where women are tall and skinny. And, you know, we have our short hourglass, chocolate women that are so beautiful. And I'm like, a leader saying this, what are children going to believe?
Yeah.
You know, is he trying to say that the black child of Botswana is supposed to starve themselves, is supposed to bleach their skin?
And that's going back to how you were brought up about when family members would call you charcoal. You know what I mean? So it's still that sentiment that he's been carrying on for generation after generation.
Say that again?
I'm saying it's going back to what the story you were telling us about how family members called you charcoal as a child.
Yes.
And what was the response?
I thought that I had to be very diplomatic in writing my poetry. So then I wrote that poem about me wanting the president, and because I'm short and stuff like that. What Niela was trying to tell him is that Botswana women are beautiful in that way, and they're not skinny, they're not light-skinned, they're not tall, but they love you. Why? Because my father saved me from that type of mentality. Like I said earlier, if he could not say I shouldn't be called such type of name, who knows? Maybe I'll be one of the women who are actually fighting a battle of confidence and beauty right now. So I had to speak on behalf of those women, make it even more interesting and catchy by saying that I want to have his kiss and stuff like that. But I was driving a very important point home, that Botswana women are as beautiful as any other woman in the world. And Botswana women are not light-skinned, they're not tall, they're not, they're just our type, middle height, medium height women.
And also, it goes back to we just need to embrace with what God gave us. You know, so, and it's very worrying when somebody in that position is saying, well, you need to be thin and light. And it's like, according to whose standards, you know, and especially.
Exactly, that is why. That is why I even moved to a different, a very different. You remember that I was wearing a swimwear then when I did that poem. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I had my big thighs and my big bum showing. And I was doing that for a reason, because black women have been told to dress long skirts, hide their bodies, because their bodies are ugly.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea. But it's very, you know, the underlying fact is that any woman in the world feels sexy when they are naked or when they are wearing lingerie. Whether you are Indian, black, gray, Chinese, when you are putting on your sexy lingerie, you really feel as more beautiful, because you want to be appreciated in your most natural way or natural form.
Yeah.
So I just went to a certain level, and most of the people didn't really read the poem unless until somebody published it in a certain newspaper. But most of the time, the critics were saying, she has fat thighs, she has a fat bum, she should not wear that lingerie, you know, that's a disgrace, you know, because, you know, we've been told that only light-skinned and tall women or skinny women are the ones who are supposed to rock lingerie or underwear.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, I had this discussion with somebody the other day, and, you know, also growing up in South Africa, the 80s and 90s, it was all you needed, thin waistline, big blonde hair, that type of thing. And it had to take a white woman to change that. And if you look at how bodies have changed and what people are looking at, I mean, if you look at the Kardashians and how they've made big bum sexy, and we were, but wait a minute, we're African. We've been rocking that for a long time, you know.
We're like, hey, what a kind of liberation, you know what I mean?
But moving on to your new project, Very Heart Poet for Dinner, and you took some really beautiful pictures and very, you know, I'm not going to say the word risque, because risque means that it's borderline something negative, but coming from a very conservative background, and especially conservative country, those pictures you took were sending a clear message out. And of course, you would get your skeptics saying, okay, well, it's pornography. And I remember getting into an argument with somebody saying, well, it's not pornography. Her legs aren't split open. It's not showing anything that's too, you know, it's just showing the beautiful curves that you have and so forth. What was the idea behind Berry Heart for Dinner?
Oh, Berry Heart for Dinner is one of the projects. It's actually my most expensive project so far, because if you can realize, I've featured very big artists in the country, and also the photography is amazing, and the people who did everything were professional to a certain degree, and also I took my time to conceptualize the idea behind.
Right.
Well, my explanation to the picture itself, before I get to the song and the content, is I'm merely trying to communicate and take and expose the state of women in my country, or in most patriarchal societies. The reason why I am sitting barely naked, although I'm not showing an explicit organs, is because that's how women are, and I'm tied with a rope, and that rope is very symbolical because it's not a chain. This was the rope that was used during slavery time.
Right.
That was the rope that was used to lynch black people around the world. And that is the very same rope that is used to sentence people to death.
Yeah.
That rope is very, very significant in that picture.
Yeah.
And the reason why I'm naked and I have my hands tied with it is because I'm a woman in Botswana. I don't own my body. It's more like the society or the men own my body. And I'm helpless. Hence why my eyes are looking up to heaven for help.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So that's the whole idea behind. Because women all around the world don't get raped because they are naked.
Mm.
Women get raped because they are women. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, it's a power struggle. Yeah.
Yes, it's a power struggle. It has nothing to do with what you are wearing. I'm merely calling for the respect of women with or without clothes, because we are not our clothes. We just want the respect beyond the clothes that we wear, because the eyes of the perpetrator, they look at us beneath those clothes, through those clothes. The eyes pierce through those clothes and they see us as naked. That is how we can look at, get raped when you are wearing your jeans.
It's so true. And what is the response been from that, from press, negative and positive?
Notice it is nearly the same. Some of the people were saying that I am fat.
Mm.
I should put on clothes. I'm a role model. What are children going to say?
Mm.
You know, I should have looked for somebody thinner with a more beautiful body to do that on,
what?
You know what I mean?
What?
To do that.
I guess those are the people that fall into the group of you need to be thin and light-skinned.
Yes, actually here in Botswana, being naked is not a problem, especially if you are doing lingerie, whatever. The only problem is when you have fat size and a big bum like very hard. That is exactly what I'm trying to fight, and I'm going to win that battle.
Mm. And where do you plan to take it? I mean, what else? What other programs or anything surrounding Berry Heart for Dinner? What I mean, it's, as you said, you've put in so much money and effort into this. It can't just be a photo shoot and just be a release. I mean, what are your projections for it?
Actually, I've been sending, the first step that I did was sending CDs all around the country.
Mm.
I just sent some to Kenya.
Okay.
I just sent some to Kenya, and I'll be looking around to spend. I'm really looking forward, Rosie, to get that single into South Africa.
Yeah.
And most importantly, because of that, and also the idea behind the photography, and also the music, because now I'm not doing in English, if you can understand.
Mm.
I hope you got that.
Yeah. No, I'm going to play it to end off the show in a couple of minutes. But I think that's also very important because culturally, and I don't know, and I'm speaking for mainly South Africa, is that for a long time people needed to put their message across in English because it's the universal language. But I think it has a lot more stretch and a lot more depth if it's done in your natural vernac.
Yes. Actually, I was last time when you told me that when I talk of my grandmother or when I speak my mother tongue, the resonance totally changes.
Mm.
Because then you are talking naturality and you are talking from the heart.
Yeah, it's passion-driven.
Now, exactly. That is why of late people are saying, no, you should start using a lot of your mother tongue in your work, and I've done that because last year at the International Story Model Hay Festival in Kenya, I told one of my grandmother's stories to the audience.
Mm.
There was dead drop silence, pin drop silence, and it was their favorite piece. They didn't know what I was saying, but they could feel a lot of richness in it.
Mm.
So then I started incorporating my mother tongue in all my production, or in most of my production.
Yeah. Well, it's very, very important. And CNN, I mean, that was absolutely beautiful, beautiful interview. And I'm going to, it should be on YouTube, and I'm obviously going to post it from next week. But what doors are you planning for? I know doors are going to open from that interview because now you've been placed on the global stage on television. What do you hope to achieve from that? I mean, where are we going to take Berry Heart, the brand?
I really wanted to thank my agency, the Waka Management Agency.
Mm.
And not that I am competing with anybody there. I'm just looking at, I'm so inspired by the best group of Pan-African artists there. Although I'm smaller, to a certain extent, with age and both the profile, I am so inspired by the people in the agency. You know, if they could go from point A to Z, I think I can also make it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was like, this is where I really need to go. I need to store my wings and just fly like the rest of our team.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to soar and be the queen that you are and let people know.
Exactly. And that interview was so brilliant. That is just bringing it to the world. I was very ill when we shot the interview.
Mm. But you're a true artist. You're a true professional because it didn't come across. You know, you had a spark in your eyes. It was beautiful. I was watching it like I was your mother. I had a tear in my eye. It was a beautiful interview. It really, really was. And I'm not just saying that because it's you. It was. And I was like, yeah, you've got something very special, and the rest of the world needs to know it and see it.
Absolutely. I'll take that compliment because I was really ill.
My darling, we've run out of time, but quick post for your fans out there. Where to from now? Which countries are you going to be visiting up until the end of the year?
This year I cancelled a lot of my Europe tour,
mm-hmm.
because even my trip to India, I was supposed to go back to India in November.
Yeah.
Because I'm launching my lingerie line called For Dinner.
Okay.
I realized that it's very important that I have a lingerie line for people who are actually thicker.
Absolutely.
To show women that also they fat women or thick women that they need to. Wear sexy stuff as well from time to time.
Yeah.
That is why I can't so much because now I have investors and investors are looking at me of how I'm pushing the brand right now.
Yeah.
Instead of me traveling, yes, I need traveling and performing to, you know, but there's nothing that I can do because I'm launching on the 19th of December, which is on my birthday.
Yeah.
The lingerie line is actually my 28th birthday present to myself.
Yeah.
And I thought, I should cancel all the trips. I'm only going to Kenya this year.
Okay.
You know, that's
good enough. So, December is going to be quite an exciting month, and of course, we'll push that just to let people know beforehand, and of course, pushing the lingerie brand and who you are. And, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years, it's Berry Heart is going to be an international brand that will be coming off everyone's tongue because. You know, not only is it poetry, is it dance, but it's integrity. It's you stand by your word, you know. And also you've done that in a country which hasn't allowed you to. So I salute you and I take my hat off for you. And please don't stop because we need more Berry Hearts like you. But Berry, I'm going to put up Child and My Mother, the poem on my Facebook page, which is Rosie Mutena, because it's also an incredibly, incredibly powerful poem. And I didn't read it because it's very long, but I'm going to put that up and keep us posted about what you're doing, where you're going. And thank you, my sister. Thank you so much because you really, really are an inspiration.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Take care.
Such a role of inspiration and struggle.
Thank you. Bye. That was a gorgeous Berry Heart. I'm going to put up a gorgeous picture of her also. I mean, she's tiny. She talks about this like big voluptuous thighs and legs, and it's not big, you know, but she has a heart of gold. She lives by passion. And, you know, I want to see her grow to greater lengths because she really has done a lot in terms of changing laws and changing attitudes in terms of women and the girl child in Botswana. So for that, we salute her. We will see you next week, same time, same place. If you have any suggestions, critiques, what have you, as I said, I'm on Twitter, PrincessRTM. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, under Rosie Mutena. Otherwise, we'll see you next week, same time, 3 to 4, and we're going to play out with Berry Heart's Berry Heart for Dinner.
Pan-African Connect on cliffcentral.com.